And welcome back, everyone, to your Crypto Weekly Market Rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency, from the technicals on the chart to the fundamentals in the news. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And man, what a week we just had in the crypto markets. We're finally getting a pullback, and there's a big catalyst and a big reason why this is happening. And it's something that we want to talk about in today's episode. But TiVo, before we get kicked off, before we get too deep, what are we seeing on your end?
Well, interesting week. Number can't always go up, as we like to say. And I threw out a little tweet last night, checking in on everybody, making sure everyone's okay. I literally just tweeted everyone okay. It seemed a positive sentiment all around. People were definitely hurting, but they seemed to be ready and lining up to buy some of the dips. So shout out to our guy, TD the boy. He said he's getting slammed across the board, but he's lining up some buy orders, you know, around the low 60s, high 50s. We'll see if those get hit for him. But just staying on track. And I think if you really, to be honest, Brendan, I'd like to give you some flowers, because if you listened to this show last week, you were more amply prepared for this dip, because you literally called this thing to a T. Now, you did preface that you never have a crystal ball. However, let's listen to this clip literally from last week to see that, you know, if you're listening to this show on a weekly basis, the Crypto Market Rundown, you're getting pure crypto alpha from some of the best in the space like yourself. Let's check this clip.
Those are the times when I'm the most interested on accumulating the dip. When Bitcoin pulls back to its 20 or 50 day moving average, or when it pulls back to these previous consolidation zones, these previous resistance levels, that is when I am the most excited about accumulating on Bitcoin. And we haven't had a ton of pullback yet. So I'm looking at this area. I'm not bearish on Bitcoin, right? I'm not shorting it, but I am acknowledging that, you know, at some point in the future, it's likely that we see a pullback. Now, is that today? Is that next week? Is that next month? You know, I don't have a crystal ball. We can look at the charts and get a general idea of when things are slowing down. But, you know, it is something that I'm preparing myself for, actually.
As you said, Brendan, you don't have a crystal ball. However, it was this week that this came to fruition, at least a little bit.
Yeah, and dip we did, TiVo. And I'm a man of my word. I went in there, I had limit orders, and I did indeed do some buying on both Bitcoin and some altcoins as well.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
So what we saw, you know, from top to bottom here was Bitcoin dipped about 17.5%, while Ethereum dipped around 25%. And so the whole crypto market from top to bottom lost about $500 billion in market cap. So it wasn't a small pullback. It was definitely sizable. But this is the opportunity. Like, this is the moment that I was talking about last week that people should be prepared for. Now, I'm not saying the bottom's in, but this is one of those areas where I'm starting to get comfortable layering into some buys on some really strong assets. So let's go ahead and take a look at the general crypto charts here so that everyone can get an understanding of what happened, how far we've fallen, the levels that we're at, etc. So if we take a look at Bitcoin specifically here, as I said, Bitcoin is down from top to bottom. It was about a 17 to 18% drop. Now, one of the things that I want to highlight to everyone is just what a normal pullback looks like in the crypto markets. And so I think that there's two really good ways to do this. Number one, we can go all the way back to the previous market cycle of 2020. And if we do that, we can look at all these previous dips that Bitcoin has had over here. So what this is this shows us around the time of the halving from May of 2020, when the halving event happened, what happened after the halving event, what happened before the halving event, and then we can kind of see all the dips that happened afterwards. Now, the reoccurring trend that you're going to see here is that prior to the halving, guess what? We bottomed out. We saw a nice rally leading into the halving. And then around the time of the halving, we had some choppy price action. Prices went up. You know, they eventually came down. They chopped around for a bit. It wasn't the most fun and exciting time to be in crypto around the time of the halving. But the post-halving catalyst is what everyone gets excited for. And that is what we are looking forward to over here. So we can see that even since the time of the previous halving event, there was a lot of dips. There was a lot of double-digit pullbacks. In fact, it's pretty common to see nearly a dozen double-digit pullbacks in terms of like percentage points. So when we look at this, the halving event happened, and then we saw a 15% dip, and then we hit new highs, and then a 22% dip, then new highs, 10% dip, new highs, 17%, 12%, 10%, 20%, 31% dip, 26%, 18%, and the list goes on. Now, the big takeaway here is that number one, there have been dips, and it's pretty normal to see dips that are larger than we've already seen on Bitcoin. Again, there's some 20, 30% moves in here, and we're only down about 17 and a half, maybe 18%, depending on the exchange that you're looking at. So it's certainly possible that we see some bigger dips down here towards the 50-day moving average, which we have seen tested a bunch of different times. And in the early stages, you know, this is something that has actually even broken. Now, the other key takeaway beyond just saying, hey, these dips are normal and they're actually quite frequent, and the odds are we're going to see bigger, badder ones to come as the crypto market goes on. The second side of that coin is that every time that we have one of these dips, Bitcoin ends up higher than it previously was. So despite it pulling back 15%, it shot to new highs. Despite it pulling back 22%, it shot to new highs. Despite it pulling back 10%, new highs, 17% pullback, new highs, 12% pullback, new highs. And you get the pattern here, right? You can see that after every pullback, we're hitting new highs. Well, if this really is something that we should pay attention to, then we would expect that it is reliable in more than one market cycle, and that it is. So if we go back to the halving event prior to that one, well, we're going to see a very similar story. So this is the halving event from July 9th, 2016. Similar thing, we see a bottom out before the halving. We see a nice little rally leading into the halving. Does this look familiar yet? And then around the time of the halving, guess what? There is some choppy price action. We're moving sideways. Heck, we even get a pretty nice pullback in Yank to kind of prepare us for the coming move. And then after the post-halving choppiness, the crypto market turns around and we see the actual halving rally itself. And so here's another scenario where we see nearly a dozen double-digit pullbacks, but after every single one, Bitcoin is going up to new highs. So it doesn't matter if it's Bitcoin pulling back 30% here, 10% here, 34%, 33%, 32%, 40%, 40%, 13, 30, the list goes on. There's all these big pullbacks. After every single one, Bitcoin was ending up higher than it had previously been before. And the same is true for the halving event even before this one. We can look at the 2012 halving. We can see the choppiness around the halving event itself. We can see the pivot beforehand. We can see the choppiness. And then we can see the post-halving rally. And so that kind of leads me into our current discussion of like where we are at in the current state today and saying, hey, as we're seeing all of this craziness, all of this, you know, price action, I know it can be a scary thing. This isn't anything that I'm really freaking out about because it's all so textbook to what we've seen in previous halving cycles. And we're not doing anything out of character here. Now, I think that we can say that the pre-halving rally was actually, you know, fairly strong, right? And so, at least, again, this is my opinion. We are riding the pre-halving rally. And yes, it was a strong one, but it's mainly been off the catalyst of the ETFs. And we haven't really even dipped our toes too deep into the halving rally itself, because that's not something that we typically see go into effect for like a month, maybe 2 months after the halving. So we're surely just riding off of like the catalyst of the whole ETF approvals and not necessarily of the halving rally itself. And that's something that's probably going to get started within the next couple of months. But I do expect choppiness going into that. And so like the clip that we showed earlier said, this was something that I was purposely loading up my centralized exchange account with USD and USDC so that I can go ahead and buy these dips. And there's a lot of cryptos out there that are showing a ton of opportunity. And One of the ways that I've actually been playing this market is I've been looking at two things. I've been looking at Bitcoin dominance and the ETH BTC ratio. Now, I'm a trader. I love trading. I've done it for years now. But when I'm trying to decide what to trade, these are two of the things that I look at. It's like, okay, do I want to be trading Bitcoin more heavily? Or do I want to be trading Ethereum and maybe altcoins more heavily? Well, when Bitcoin dominance is on the decline or ETH BTC is on the rise, then that's when I'm going to be trading the altcoins. And recently, we can see that like something like, you know, ETH BTC has been in a pretty nice little downtrend for the last couple of weeks here for the majority of March after about the first week. And so this is an area where I'm saying, okay, if I want to go long, I'm probably going to focus on longing something like Bitcoin until this pivots. Now, this isn't a long-term trading solution. This isn't a long-term play. This is definitely more of like a short-term for myself and for people who like to day trade out there. I look at this and I say, okay, on these shorter-term long positions, I'm going to favor Bitcoin a little bit more. Now, we could be seeing a pivot with a candle like this. Again, it's not something that's meant to last forever, but it is something that I'm looking at, with today being a little bit of an exception on this, where Ethereum seeing a really nice rebound, about, you know, outperforming Bitcoin by about 2-1. So Ethereum's up about 5%, Bitcoin's up about 2.5%. But prior to this point, it's been Bitcoin kind of, you know, performing better than Ethereum since the pullback itself has happened. And then there's another of other cryptocurrencies that have been doing really well. And I don't want to ruin Solana too much because we're going to talk about it in depth in just a little bit. But man, Solana rallied past $200, this monstrous event. You know, it was outperforming a lot of the leading Ethereum DEXs. You had the Solana DEXs going nuts, record levels of volumes and fees. It's something that we're going to talk about in just a bit. You also had Maker shooting to new highs. You had a number of other cryptocurrencies that are just seeing great recoveries across the board. So it doesn't matter if it's like Render seeing a good recovery. You're also seeing things like, you know, Ondo seeing a great recovery. The list goes on, right? I mean, we could talk about these things forever, but that's kind of where we're at right now. So nice little recovery. Again, it isn't something that I think has to be done yet. It's not like, hey, we've rebounded, the bottom is in. I don't know if we have enough information to kind of say that yet. I hope it's in. I want it to be in. But again, kind of looking back at the historical analysis that we just did, it's completely possible to see Bitcoin dip more and it wouldn't be anything out of pocket. It wouldn't be anything too scary. Yeah, it sucks that the price could go down to maybe like the 50-day moving average on Bitcoin, which is a little bit closer to maybe like the mid to low 50s. I think that that would be a solid potential bottoming point if we do want to go lower. And so that's something that I'm looking at. Again, around the mid to low 50s, I think that there is this little area of opportunity if we break the current lows on Bitcoin. Now, Ethereum has already touched the 50-day moving average. We came down here and look what happened. The bounce and the support that Ethereum got around this 50-day moving average when price hit close to $3,000, it touched this thing, closed the first candle, opened up the second candle, and then immediately just started ripping up towards the upside. So it's not looking awful. We're seeing support. It's not like we're just selling off and selling off and selling off. And I want to talk about the catalyst here because, again, as we said at the beginning, there's a pretty justifiable reason as to why the markets have sold off. But before we get into that, I mean, TiVo, do you have any thoughts on this? I kind of just information dumped, but
yeah, no, I mean, as always, just here to learn. I think that dips are good. Dips are good for buying, like you said, if you strategically are ready for it. I also think that it's a good time to kind of clean up your portfolio a little bit too, from a personal thought of like, when everything's going up at the insane rate that it was over the last 6 weeks, like you get really excited because everything works, right? Like, oh my God, I'm a genius. Everything I've bought is just going up. And I think the dips kind of can be good of whether it's time to maybe take some profits on something that's a trade or to clean up your portfolio. Like, it's easier to kind of cut projects, maybe phrase it like you really learn what you believe in long term, because if you kind of bought something, it ripped and then it's going down and you're like, well, I don't really know about that long term, so maybe you cut that to build up some funds for something that you really believe in, like a Bitcoin, Ethereum, or whatever project you deem it long term of something that you want to buy the dip. But if the projects, you know, seems to be falling apart a little bit, maybe technically, and the price is going down and you don't have any long term plans for it, It's an easier time to maybe take some profits and build up your bankroll for the dip buying.
Definitely. And, you know, I think the big question on everyone's mind here is like, why are we pulling back? We were so bullish. We were so optimistic. Why now? Like, what would stop us? We broke out to new all-time highs. We shattered the previous all-time high of 69,000, went all the way up to like 73, 74,000, depending on the exchange that you're looking at. And then we started pulling back and pulling back quite heavily. So like, what caused this event? And so I want to flash something up on the screen share. Again, if you are a listener on Spotify or Apple Music, you can check out the YouTube section, and that's going to have all of the screen shares and video material that we are referencing through this market update. But there is one player, one source. We talked about him quite a bit. Grayscale is back at it again. Now, Grayscale, since the this is wild, and I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant here, TiVo, because this has me fired up. But Grayscale continues to just dump billions and billions of dollars of Bitcoin onto the markets. And it's gotten to the point now where they have lost almost half of their assets under management since the ETFs launched 2 months ago. So think about this. A company whose sole purpose, whose major purpose at least, is, you know, to manage assets, they have lost almost half of their assets in 2 months' time since the very thing that they have been fighting for came out. So this thing released, the Bitcoin ETFs released, and they have just been losing astronomical amounts. So as you can see from the chart on the screen, when the whole ETFs were released, they had over 600,000 Bitcoin under management. Now that number's under 400,000. It's in the 300,000s. So they have lost almost half of their Bitcoin supplies that they had been managing since the ETFs have launched. And when we go and we look at like the GBTC outflows by day, just 2 days ago on March 18th, GBTC or Grayscale had their largest day of outflows ever since the ETFs launched. And I know what you're thinking. You're saying they've had some pretty big days where they've been doing $500 million of selling in terms of like dollar amounts of Bitcoin. And you're right. But just the other day, 2 days ago on Monday, they sold off $643 million worth of GBTC. So that breaks their previous record by just a little bit and marks their largest day of outflows to date. Now, why is this a frustrating thing? Well, they just seem to not care. Everyone's big concern here is like, clearly they are, you know, clearly they are losing money. And I think it was justifiable as the market was moving up. But now they've lost almost half of the Bitcoin that they're supposed to be managing. They are still continuing to sell off billions. They are the ones that are like actually dumping the market. And if we didn't have billions and billions of dollars of outflows, the price of Bitcoin would be drastically higher than it was. We probably wouldn't have topped out at $73,000, $74,000. Yet here we are, they continue to sell off. And it's finally gotten to the point where their CEO was over on TV and he was like, I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. It seemed like he was super nonchalant about the whole thing. And he's like, yeah, you know, it is what it is. And originally they're like, we are not going to reduce our fees on Bitcoin, on our primary ETF. Then they started losing massive amounts of capital. And they said, okay, well, we'll create this new mini Bitcoin ETF and the fees will be more competitive. And now it's getting to the point where they're like, you know, maybe we will reduce our primary Bitcoin ETF fees to be more competitive. And so here's the quote from him saying, over time, as this market matures, the fees on BTC will come down. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this topic, the average rate on these things are like, you know, like a quarter of a basis point, right? You have 0.25% as like an pretty average fee. Well, Grayscale's is 1.5 to like 2%. So they're like 6, 7, 8 times higher than everyone else in the industry. And they just don't care. And so everyone's saying, why in the world would I trade with Grayscale? Why would I let them manage my money and pay 8 times the fees that BlackRock or Fidelity or Van Eyck or, you know, Invesco or any of these other big players are going to do? And they just don't care. And so they're like, nah, we'll think about it. And I saw a quote of them being like, once we see more outflows, we'll think about lowering our fees. And again, like, they're a giant catalyst here for this crash, and they are just so nonchalant about the whole thing. And I don't know how any company can lose almost half of their assets under management, half of their business, and just be so nonchalant about it. So again, that's my little rant. It has me fired up, because the moment that they stop selling off Bitcoin en masse is a moment that I think will go parabolic. And so maybe that's just them stopping their selling. And when we go and we look at this chart over here of when they stopped selling, this is when Bitcoin really started to rally. You look from the end of January through February, and we go back to the Bitcoin chart, and we can see that from the end of January through February, this is when the price of Bitcoin was really, really rising. Or I'm sorry, this is Ethereum, but you get the picture. This is when Bitcoin was really, really rising in terms of price over the month of February. And it's not a coincidence that this is when they were selling off and having the lowest levels of outflows. So whenever we see these numbers come down again, we'll see that all the other inflows from Fidelity and BlackRock and everyone else, they're still staying high. But when you have them selling off $650 million of Bitcoin in a day, it's hard to keep up with that level of outflows, even with the record amounts of buying that we're seeing on Bitcoin. So that's my little spiel. That's my little rant. You know, when the outflows slow down, stop, or dare I say even flip from Fidelity, that will be one of the times that I think we're going to see the crypto markets rally. And it's something that I'm watching closely. And, you know, if the Grayscale execs are listening to this, you know, please consider what everyone, and I mean everyone in the crypto market, wants you to do. Help us all out, lower the fees, you know, take a break from all this stuff, and let prices recover a little bit here.
Yeah, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in their board meetings of, you know, what's going on. I think that they definitely, their original pitch, if you see the timeline of how they've switched tones, it was when we first got approved and all the other ETFs, their line was Grayscale is the longest, most trusted Bitcoin product. We have the most volume for getting in and out of trades, and that's why our fee is going to be higher. And then, you know, obviously, there's a lot of success, especially with BlackRock's ETF. And then kind of the tone, all these outflows, the tone switched to, like you said, the mini ETF. There's going to be a mini ETF that's lower fees. And maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but if they're launching a new fund that has lower fees, the mini ETF, isn't that exactly what the opposite of what you were promoting your products to be is trusted, long time, specifically large volume? So if you start this mini ETF, you're not going to have that much volume. So then who are you trying to attract to be in that fee? But it was a red flag. It was, okay, you're definitely noticing this. Like we talked about it on the show a couple weeks ago. You're noticing the pain. And, you know, long term, I guess it's not sustainable. And then shortly after that, now we have this of we're going to start lowering our fees. And I don't know. It just, I feel like I get maybe putting your digging your heels into the dirt and the sand and being like, hey, we're not moving yet. But if you keep talking about it at this pace, I don't know, figure out where maybe you don't have to go down to everybody else. But, you know, there's got to be some smart people in the world and on their team that could do some calculations that like, okay, if we move it to this amount of basis points, you know, it's better to stay with a higher fee for tax consequences than if we do this fee. It's like whatever they're doing now doesn't seem to be working for their long-term holders. I'm not the smartest guy to figure out to know exactly what that is, but there's got to be something that they can try, and you know that they're thinking about it. So hopefully that's on the horizon.
Yeah, and put it this way, if they continue to do the same level of selling that they have done for the last 2 months, for an additional 2 months, they will be almost out of assets. They will have completely cleared out their entire Bitcoin holdings, and they went from being like literally one of the largest holders of Bitcoin. I believe that they were the largest entity, or the entity that held the most amount of Bitcoin, or they were like top two, top three. And they will be completely out of all of it if this selling continues for another 2 months. That's how much they are selling off, is that in 2 months' time, they have almost cut their supply in half. And if we continue to do this for another 2 months, if they continue to do this for another 2 months, they're going to be dry. Like, they're going to be gone. And so it kind of begs the question of, like, you know, is Grayscale even going to be around in a couple of years from now? And if they continue this, the answer is, like, maybe not. Now, that's again, crazy. I don't think that they're going to let it get to that point where they're going to be like, oh, we're out of everything. But it is weird that a crypto company that has been so focused on serving the crypto market and Bitcoin and Ethereum, which is something worth talking about, they've been so committed to it for years. And then here they are just clearing out the wallet. So like, I don't know. It raises a concern. Like, why would someone who's been so focused on accumulating Bitcoin just clear it out so fast? And I understand taking profits and getting out over time, but they are just like flushing the wallets dry. And, you know, one of the scary things here is that they're fighting for a bit or for an Ethereum ETF, right? That's the next big thing that everyone's looking for. And Grayscale is fighting to have the Ethereum ETF. And it makes everyone wonder, like, they're fighting for this so bad. And if they do the same thing that they've done with Bitcoin, then they're going to start dumping Ethereum too. And so what's worse than them dumping billions of dollars of Bitcoin onto the market, dumping billions of dollars of Bitcoin and Ethereum onto the market? So people are looking at this scenario and being like, you know, maybe it's not the best idea that we get an Ethereum ETF approved right now, because as great as that would be from everyone else, it's clear that Grayscale's objective here is to sell off. And the last thing that we need them doing is selling off on more than one front.
I don't know if it's their objective, but it's like, if they don't compete with the fees, then it's the natural order of things. And I think I said this on last week or 2 weeks ago. It's like, not only were they leaders in the space, they literally led the charge. It was their lawsuit, you know, that won over the SEC that was able to get, you know, put the SEC in an impossible position to not approve the Bitcoin ETF. So, you know, they're filing for the Ethereum ETF. Do they even want to put the money forward to pay the lawyers to get this thing across the finish line? And I don't know if you're looking at, you know, all your management fees going in the, you know, down the toilet, like we just talked about with everybody, you know, selling off their Bitcoin and leaving the fund. Maybe them themselves are like, yeah, let's not focus on spending a ton of money on lawyers to get an Ethereum ETF.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a complicated matter, right? There's a lot that goes into it, and I get it, but it's still frustrating. You'd like to see them be a little bit more empathetic when it comes to this subject. And again, it's the whole nonchalant, like they seem like they don't care. They seem emotionless about the topic that's affecting so many people. And that seems to be the thing that people are upset about. We're not just getting a clear reading from them, and they're just like, maybe we'll lower the fees. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll go through all these other solutions. So time will tell. You know, it's definitely a potentially frustrating topic. If you can't see, it gets me and probably a lot of other analysts riled up about this matter. But they can't go on for forever.
I think a Batman quote fits here. It's you know, the one that's like, you either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. And it seems that Grayscale is slowly turning into the space's villain when they were our hero not much more than 6-8 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I was talking to you this morning, and I was like, TiVo, we need an Obi-Wan Anakin meme where it's like Obi-Wan's looking at Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, and he's like, you've become the very thing that you swore to destroy. And then I could just like imagine a meme where it's like Michael Saylor or like the Bitcoin holders yelling at the Grayscale CEO. Because that's how a lot of us feel. You know, a lot of us feel like your whole purpose was to like promote and grow the crypto markets through ETFs, and now here you are dumping on the markets and becoming like doing the opposite of what you were supposed to, you know, originally be intended for. So people just feel a little bit betrayed, and you know, we'll see. Again, they can't continue this for forever. Maybe we have a little bit of downside more in the markets, but you know, it doesn't worry me too much because I know that they only have so much in the tank to get rid of, and everyone else is still massively interested in buying. So whenever that pivot point happens, like we saw in February, prices will go back up, and it doesn't concern me too much. I think it sucks that, you know, no one wants, like, I don't think many people want BlackRock to be like the dominant holder of Bitcoin. I think that most of us understand that, you know, letting BlackRock control a significant amount of Bitcoin could be a potentially scary thing. And so we're forced into an interesting situation where it's like, all right, well, we root for BlackRock to acquire increasingly more market share of Bitcoin, or we root for them to not do that and for prices to dump. So, you know, we're in between a little bit of a rock and a hard place, TiVo.
I agree. I always thought in the back of my head, not to Monday morning quarterback and give myself props when I was looking at what we James Seyfarth coined the Cointucky Derby of all the different people that have the ETFs. I was always like, who's going to beat BlackRock? Like, I just, if anybody, it was Grayscale, right? Because they had the biggest head start. And now you're looking at it, it's like, what, man, shit. I don't think anybody can beat BlackRock. Larry Fink's out the gate strong.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and switch up the mood here. Let's talk about something positive, something that has been doing above and beyond our expectations. And, you know, a couple of months ago, we were talking about Solana nonstop. We were talking about the growth statistics. We were talking about its volume, its activity. We were talking about everything, right? Saying, hey, this thing looks promising. And fast forward to where we're at today, Solana's price has pierced through $200. It's approaching all-time highs, or rather, it approached all-time highs. And man, this thing has been leading the charge. And I want to go ahead and kind of flash up a screen here as well, some on-chain metrics that we can look at. But this thing in like a month's time. So from the beginning of February, it went from like just under $100 on February 1st, it was like $92. Fast forward to where we are at just a few days ago, it went up 126% from $92 to $210. It was this giant upside move, more than doubled in price, made people a lot of money. And now if we zoom out, its all-time highs are not that far away. I mean, look at this. I'm going to move us to a weekly chart to see it just a little bit better. But we came up towards this previous high, tapped this resistance level, saw a bit of a rejection. Again, nothing too crazy. Pretty textbook move to see a rejection at a level like this one. But man, if we break here on Solana, we have room to go up to like 260, which is right around its previous all-time high. And if we break that, that's where things could get really, really fun for the Solana holders. And we're not that far. Now, if you would have asked me a year and a half ago, and said, Brendan, do you think that Solana can be back at its all-time highs in a year's time? This is at a point where Solana was like $8, $9, $10. I would have said there is no way that we see Solana go from $10 to $200 in a year's time. They're down bad from FTX and all this other stuff. But as time went on, this is something that I came to the realization of last year, is that people were still building. All the builders, all the people behind the scenes that we talked to were so optimistic about Solana. And they're like, hey, this thing is not dying from the whole FTX debacle. And they're actually coming out really, really strong. So don't count them out. So I actually had to change my bias on the subject. And I'm glad I did. So they have really, really passed my expectations. And so with Solana crossing this $200 mark, it begs the question, like, what has been the big catalyst here? And it has been, you know, a number of different things, right? But one of the big ones here is the meme coin explosion that Solana has had. And I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more, like on the meme side in just a bit, but they have these tokens popping up and just going from zero to hero overnight. Tokens that are going from like, you know, it's $1,000 market cap to $1 billion market cap within like 1, 2, 3, 4 days. And people are riding them. And there's all these stories of people putting in like $100, $1,000 and coming out with like millions of dollars. And so, I mean, you can see from the titles over here, I mean, newly issued token boasts trading volumes in the tens of millions. And I was just going and looking at some of the numbers and some of the stories over here, but it's wild. And, you know, again, we're going to talk about it in just a little bit, but you have things like Book of Memes and Slurf, which I still don't even really know what Slurf is. I don't think I want to know what it is. The name sounds a little weird, but you have these memes that are just blowing up over here and doing really, really well. Now, if we go and we also look at just like what's happening to Solana in general, Solana's TVL is going parabolic. Look at this thing. So if we look at their TVL from like the end of last year, they were sitting at around 700 million in TVL. We go to where we are currently at today, we're at 6 billion. They've seen an over a 7x in their TVL since the end of last year to the beginning of this year. That's wild. They've gone from 700 million to over $6 billion in TVL. Now, for the people who aren't familiar, TVL stands for total value locked. This is people like committing their money, putting it in the staking protocols, committing it to the blockchain, locking it away to support the network. It's a really good, healthy metric to look at. So to see this thing grow exponentially, again, almost like a 7-8x in the last, 5 months here, it's a really good thing to see for overall Solana growth. Another thing that we saw is that Solana's main DEXs, their main decentralized exchanges, actually saw an outperformance of Uniswap. Now, normally, Uniswap is the largest decentralized exchange. It is Ethereum native, and it's known as like the father of the DEXs. It always has the most volume and trading activity and all this stuff, but that flipped here recently. And so what we saw was Radium, Jupiter, and even at one point Orca outperforming and seeing more volume than Ethereum's Uniswap, which is a wild thing to see because that almost never, ever happens. And so here from the picture that you can see on the screen, at the time that this was taken, Radium and Jupiter, two of the main leading DEXs for Solana, were above Uniswap. And at one point, Orca was actually above it as well for a brief period of time. And so with this, Radium and Jupiter saw astronomical increases in price. Just look at the market dominance. You can see from the top right, it says percentage of market share by volume. And you had Radium and Jupiter doing almost double what Solana was doing, or what Uniswap was doing. So big old crazy metric. And then also, if we look at a couple other things, like the number of active addresses on Solana, again, parabolic. They were seeing, towards the end of last year, Solana was seeing 200,000 active addresses every day. Now they're seeing like 1.6 million. So they're just this drastic increase in activity, drastic increase in active users. And then the final thing that I wanted to show over here was the total fees on Solana over here on the left. And so you can see the fees are just through the roof. And so what does this mean? Well, it actually tells us. So what this metric means is this is the total amount of transaction fees paid on Solana each day in both SOL and USD. So when we're looking at this, they are just seeing record levels of activity. And this chart has gone completely parabolic. And if we zoom out, this is bigger than what they have done, like multi times bigger than anything that they have seen done in the last like year of trading activity. And so what we are seeing is back in September, they were doing maybe like 40, 50,000 every single day. Well, now they're doing like millions. Like up at the top here, they were doing just like astronomical levels of like 3.5 million in fees, 1 million in fees, 2 million in fees. And so all of this is like a big contributing factor as to why Solana went on this big run. And it raises the solid question of, will Solana be the Ethereum killer? Because if we go over to something like CoinMarketCap, for a brief amount of time, Solana flipped BNB and became the fourth largest cryptocurrency by market cap, the third largest if you don't count the Tether stablecoin, but it's still a little while away from Ethereum. So at the time of making this, Solana's market cap is at 75 billion. Ethereum's is at roughly 400 billion. So Ethereum is still several times larger than what Solana is. And I don't see a world where Ethereum's market cap just sits the same and Solana's able to grow. I kind of see us in a spot where if the whole crypto market is heading up, it means that Ethereum's market cap will be increasing as well as like Solana's and Bitcoin and all these other cryptos market caps. So I see them moving up holistically together. The main question here is, can Solana increase at a faster rate than Ethereum and catch up and do those, that big jump from 75 million to a couple hundred million? And that would make Solana be like close to $1,000 coin if it can do that. Now, we see this happen in almost every single market cycle, right? You see everyone always say, this is going to be the Ethereum killer. That's going to be the Ethereum killer. You know, we've heard it said about Solana in the past. We've heard it said about Binance Smart Chain, about Cardano, about, you name it, Tron. The list goes on. There's all these layer ones that everyone says is going to be the Ethereum killer. And so far, nothing has been able to do it. So, it looks like this market cycle, Solana is going to be one of the ones that's given Ethereum a run for its money. But man, it's something to keep your eye on. And the metrics of like activity and usage and fees and all this stuff and TVL, they don't lie. And that's what you want to see. Now, Ethereum is still pretty dominant in terms of like developers. And Solana got a big boost here from everything that was happening on the meme side of things. But You know, keep an eye on these metrics, because when you're looking for other projects, look for those metric increases. So all the metrics that we just talked about on Solana, if you're saying, hey, I want to find the next Solana, look for those same statistics happening. Granted, probably on a smaller scale, right? It doesn't have to be the same level of like insane amounts of activity that Solana's seeing, but look for those same metrics on smaller projects. And then if you can see that they are having great amounts of developers, great amounts of activity, great amounts of like generating fees and revenue and all this other stuff, active addresses, a lively ecosystem, good DEX volume, then that's a decent sign that they have some potential growth, you know, to the upside. So yeah, I mean, what a time to be in crypto.
No doubt. And I remember when I bought more Solana was when we had Austin Federa on. I think it was late summer, early fall. And, you know, we've had him on multiple times, but he was obviously, you know, very bullish and happy about the projects that they were doing. And he invited us to the Solana conference out in Amsterdam. And we didn't have the time. It was pretty... So I guess it was a fall because we didn't have much time. I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks before the conference, but he was really trying to get us to go and was going to help us get a bunch of interviews and set us up, you know, at the conference. And I was just like, man, if this guy's that hyped up about the project, like that's got to be a good ecosystem and ready to roll. So, you know, those guys over there have been, you know, working hard forever, especially after the FTX crash to keep, keep sights on the future and not in the past.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's last topic. Well, I guess second to last topic, but we always like to go over the sentiment of kind of the markets. And I had a fun weekend. So I know you're going to talk about meme coins. I personally had an interesting in-person experience this weekend. So we had a music festival here in St. Pete, and a bunch of bands that I work for or have been friends with over the years were playing. And there's this one band called Iration, and they are just, you know, one of the best reggae rock Hawaiian bros you'll ever want to meet. You definitely need to check out their music if you've never heard of them, Iration. And when I walked into their green room trailer, because we toured this summer, so I toured with this band this summer. They toured with us, the band that I work for, Revolution. And you know, all summer I was, you know, showing them what I do with us at Crypto 101, just being like, yeah, I produce, you know, podcasts, and we have a big team, and we're all in crypto. We're all about it. It's coming back. And nobody really cared, to be honest. You know, it was June, July, August, no one seemed interested. However, I walked into their trailer, just to say what's up. And everybody freaked out. They're like, there he is, Bitcoin. Everybody started jumping up and down and, cheering. I guess they all had a couple bags of crypto that they were waiting for the comeback, and it hit. So they immediately tied me with crypto. So we were all jumping up and down the trailer, chanting Bitcoin. And then here's a clip of their before show. So before the show, they always do, you know, a little huddle up and chant something. And I thought it was interesting that since I was there, they dedicated it to Bitcoin.
Nothing more important than friendship in this life. And you know what that is?
Bitcoin!
Bitcoin!
Bitcoin, Andy! 1, 2, 3! Bitcoin!
So if you can't tell, I mean, those guys are some of the most fun guys you could ever want to be around. But that is the sentiment that, you know, the people are aware of what's going on in the crypto markets across the board. We're chanting Bitcoin before we go on stage at a music festival. Sentiment's high.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, sentiment is especially high around memes. We alluded to this a little bit earlier. But, you know, memes are a double-edged sword. You always hear the stories where people are 10, 100,000, you know, 100,000xing their money in these meme coins. Again, recently, the example that we gave was Book of Memes. And that has to be one of the craziest moves that I've ever seen in the crypto market. I mean, this thing, it's normal to see a project that has a following and is known release at like $1 billion valuation, right? You think of things like Arbitrum or like Optimism, right? Who had these big test nets, layer twos, before having a token. And I think it's normal for stuff like that to come out and be close to $1 billion project. But Book of Memes wasn't like that. You know, it released as a no name. And within 48 hours, it went from like being a brand new, no one knew about it token to going to like a $1.5 billion valuation. In like 48 hours time, they were being offered, I think, Binance listings and all these other centralized exchange listings. And everyone wanted them because they blew up in such fantastic manner. And this enabled people to just make astronomically large amounts of money. Now, we have to understand that for every Book of Meme token and Slurf and all these other cryptos that have blown up from the meme coin side of things, for every one of those that happens, there is like 1,000 ones that fail. And you never hear the stories about the ones and all the people that get burned on the bad ones. It wouldn't make sense, right? I mean, who wants to go through social media and see all these posts of like, lost everything on this, lost everything on that? Now, the stuff that goes viral is someone being like, hey, I put $1,000 into Book of Memes and I came out with like 7 million or whatever it is. And that's the stuff that goes viral and that's the stuff that you see, but you don't see all the people getting burned. And so, you know, people can certainly make money in this stuff, but it's not as easy as it looks like after the thing has already happened. And then you go and you zoom out and a lot of these memes that do run like 100x or whatever it is, you know, within a couple of days, they can be down 50, 60, 70%. Some of them even get rugged and people lose everything. So for all the people that are kind of seeing the hype out there, I just want to say, be careful with the meme side of things. You really have to be on top of stuff. You really got to be careful. You really got to know what you're doing or else you can get burned. So just wanted to pass along that message. I know that there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening out there, but be careful. You know, don't FOMO into things. And again, memes aren't my forte. And I acknowledge that people can do it and the people who are in that space and they follow it closely, they can make money, but it's just not my forte. I like investing in like fundamentally sound assets, looking at technicals, looking at fundamentals and making moves like we saw with like Solana, right? We looked at all the statistics, we did the TA, and then I make decisions based off of stuff like that. Memes are a little bit different. You know, they're more social media, more hype driven. And I think you really, really got to be prepared and connected in the space to trade those things because they're a little bit more scary.
Yeah, memes are culture. And I've just seen a lot on Twitter about people obviously talking about it because of the price action. But a lot of people are saying it's not going away. Like I felt like the last cycle we always said it was Bitcoin, ETH, and then you know, altcoins and then memes. And it's like it seems that we've broke the pattern a little bit. But people aren't necessarily mad about it, but they're talking about it nonstop, and there's a lot of meme stands. They're like, hey, memes culture, like you're supporting the layer that it's on. So whatever, like the Solana memes are popping off. So it's really it's the culture of Solana that is sticking around. So I don't know, we'll see. Time will tell. But as you said, you know, it's hard to pick and choose projects if they don't really have any real value. So just got to be careful out there.
Absolutely. Well, I think that brings us to a great closing spot. Talked about a lot in today's episode, and we hope that all of you did enjoy it. Just a quick reminder here is that if you like everything that we're talking about and you like us spending all the time doing the analysis, bringing the news to you, consider hitting that like button, consider hitting that subscribe button. If you're on maybe something like Apple Music or Spotify, leave us a review if you like the market updates that we're giving you, because we got a lot of really great stuff coming your way. So thank you all for watching, and we will see all of you in next week's episode.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.